you're contacting your customers, you're contacting your top prospects, no surprise. You're lining the dinner, you're doing the entertainment, the conversations, you get the booth organized correct, right? There's not a lot of magic in there. I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? But once you get on that show floor, it's you're moving, you're working, you're getting the appointment set up, you're having the conversations. Some of them are going to hit in 3 months, and some of them are going to hit in 2 to 3 years. But that genesis often happens at the show.
You're here with ChatGTM, Chad Horn, Michael Beck, and our special guest, Kevin Jaskulka from Checkmate, the CMO over there. Kevin is one of our favorite people in the industry. He has a fantastic grasp for all things marketing. And who knew we're actually going to maybe talk about some marketing today? Chad, what do you think?
I think we're going to get into some real stuff here with Kevin. Real stuff. And we probably, struggled with a lot of the same things that Kevin has and we'll be talking about today. So it's going to be multi-layered, I think.
Yeah, but first, Kevin, I have this proclamation scroll. I'm going to read off your bio for about 10 minutes and we're going to really dig deep. All right, we're done.
Beautiful.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Kevin? Welcome.
I'm doing well. I got a question for you, Bex.
Yeah.
Civil War.
Ooh.
Captain America or Iron Man?
I am so torn, but I have to go with Cap. He has righteousness on his side, but I do love me some Tony Stark and stuff.
No, I'm an Iron Man guy. Okay, so we got...
Yeah, I'm torn. I just had to go with my Boy Scout today. Another day, I'm more feeling more like the badass, I would have said Iron Man. So it's like music. What's your favorite song of what day? So yeah, clearly I can take a stand. Before we got together, we're like, what are we going to riff on? And clearly, marketing is the thing and it's something on everybody's mind all the time, at least if they're interested in doing business and growing things. Kevin, you had some real interesting takes coming in and we talked about things as far as like CRM and data. Where do you want to start? Let's kind of open the door here and start, open the door, bring us into the house and we can move in on what you're thinking about.
Yeah, let's go with CRM for 100.
All right, Pat. And that is potent potables for 100 for Kevin. I love this. Thank you for letting me do this with you.
I'm glad you went with that category and not one of the more off color ones. Yeah.
So yeah, let's go down that category. What you got?
So, you got your choices: HubSpot or Salesforce. It's like Google or Microsoft.
Just pick your poison.
Pick your poison: Salesforce or HubSpot. So, I see more and more companies are picking the Google and the HubSpot poison. Not that Salesforce and Microsoft aren't amazing, but unless you got an army to run the back end.
Salesforce has that rep. You need a bunch of people to run it, right? Yeah. And it's heavy.
It is heavy. And I've run both and been close to both. I actually did a classic to Lightning upgrade and it darn near broke it once. I mean, that was a massive architecture upgrade a few years
right.
ago.
And well, real quick, before we go too far down that, you mentioned two different things and it actually knitted right away to something, right? There's big and heavy and big teams that run it. And so let's talk really quick before we jump into that. What if we're saying the CRM buckets are, let's just say, Salesforce, HubSpot, Zoho, right? The cheaper one with the all-in-one stuff, right? Who do you think is Salesforce's client today or it should be their ideal customer? Who should be using Salesforce? Because the little guys shouldn't be, right?
People will disagree with the answer, but my take is it's larger companies that got a full-on IT infrastructure. I'd call it 100 million plus. Like I said, you got the back end folks to run it.
Yep.
And you have the admin staff to maintain it because that is a beast to maintain.
Okay.
And you are probably stitching together a lot of different products and moving data around through that because it doesn't quite have, in my opinion, the kind of the all-in-one tool. It's all a good combo bundle and you're done. That's probably good for 98% of the people out there.
Got it. And then we got our friend. Let's go to the bottom part of the spectrum, right? Let's talk about Zoho real quick. It's got its own thing, right? You got clearly CRM, but then the value for the smaller businesses, it has a project management tool. It's got a booking tool. It's got a signing tool. You can have multiple people sign on just for one license for almost literally everything they have. And it's not some nickel and dime. You build your own reports. There's a lot of flexibility there. But it needs a lot of configuration.
Yep.
Right? What are your thoughts on Zoho?
I don't play in Zoho. I'm a orange HubSpotter 100%. Seven deployments under my belt.
Okay, so we're going to pivot there, but there's a platform. Maybe we'll come back to that one later. So HubSpot. Now, who's HubSpot made for?
I'd say, well, then look at HubSpot. They're a $1 billion-plus company. Obviously, it can scale up that high. But anything from that to a day zero startup, right? And they've got even programs with the VCs to make it really economical to get in there. So I'm a big fan. Like I said, it's a very lightweight lift.
We are up too.
And running in a week or two. Right. I mean, seriously, you can have the base functionality up in a week or two.
Yeah. It nests things pretty nicely when it comes to those fun hierarchies of franchisee, franchisor, aggregators, and the relationships between things pretty natively. And I know you actually wrote some stuff, right? I believe you had some custom coding you've done inside of those things.
Yeah, we talked about that in that one of the reasons we're talking today is, you know, for restaurant tech companies, especially on the software side, you got some work to do. So in Marketing Hub's amazing out of the box, Sales Hub's amazing out of the box, no problem. Connect those, you're off and running. Challenge though, restaurants have a really unique corporate configuration, especially the larger ones, right? Mm-hmm. Where you might have a PE firm invested in a bunch of brands. Those brands could have locations or, you know, either that are corporate owned or franchise owned, and then you have the locations itself.
And it could be any number of concepts.
And it could be any number of concepts. So you take something like an Inspire Brands, Arby's, Buffalo Wild Wings, Dunkin', right?
Yep.
Under that, you've got multiple ideas of, hey, this is corporate owned, this is franchise owned. This franchise might own not just Arby's, but they might own Sonic.
Yeah, the Flynn Restaurant Group, they're a multi-unit aggregator, right?
And then how do you have all the locations under that?
Yeah.
So if you're a restaurant tech company trying to figure out what your footprint is, that can get a little dicey real quick.
Yeah. And there's always the mystery because a lot of this is like, how do we get to them? How does somebody access the people to have the conversations, to convert them to commerce, right? And so it's easier at the higher levels because they're bigger targets. So we know addresses, we know phone numbers, we can pretty much figure out who they are.
Right.
But then when you're going to the sniping level of expansion and growth, then it's more obscure. You're calling a store.
Right,
you're not calling a corporate office. These folks often don't have LinkedIn profiles. There's interesting challenges in that.
So from a data architecture perspective in HubSpot, right, you at least the way I've solved it, and I've solved it this way in a couple of companies, in the company object of HubSpot, that's mm-hmm. where the restaurant brands go,
mm.
right? Yep. That's where Arby's would go. That's where Buffalo Wild Wings go. That's where Sonic goes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the beauty is HubSpot has a lot of really good ways to set up custom objects. So yes. You've got all your major brands inside the company object, but then you build custom objects around it. And then the custom objects, you can build the PE and the franchisors who own those companies, the franchises who are franchised to the companies, and then the locations, and then use the associations to stitch it all together logically. So you can go in and get a really good view of your company footprints, what franchisors you're talking to, and how those locations play out.
Yeah. What about degrees of people relations? Like, so I know Bob is influential in Inspire Brands. It's on the board of NRA, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, and trying to draw those really smart or more strategic points of how we influence this business to move it forward. How do you solve that? Like understanding those variables on the influencers that might not be necessarily a decision maker, but those points of connection.
Yep. And then you can get smart, like you said, a part of it, see how you associate through those and logically link them up inside with the record IDs. The next part would be how you're going to use data labels, data tags against the contact, who's primary, who's in a buying role, or you can even go to the contact level and through a property or a field, define where they fit in the buying role or what their role is inside the organization. Mm.
Kevin, for you guys, and you know, please speak to how you think most companies do this or ought to do this. CRM is, I think most orgs view it as like through the sales lens first, right? Acquiring customers. But you need to know about your customers and track things with respect to your customers for a variety of functions, your success management, your onboarding experience, support. How do you think about that, right? In terms of, all right, We need a hierarchy and structure everything such that it can service all of these functions.
Yeah. So Sales Hub, obviously great for customer acquisition. Support Hub, obviously really good for post-sale. Right. But there's a lot going on in the middle, right? So you close the first deal. All right, great. There's your initial revenue. You know, somewhere there's a conversation of who goes and gets the second. HubSpot out of the box doesn't have a great answer for customer success.
Mm.
They have one. I just don't think it's a great one, right? It's kind of like the lead module they came out with as well. It's like, wow, you just caused a ton of confusion. Love HubSpot, but they hated their lead module. We don't use it. We handle all the leads still against the contact and in conjunction with the company. Same thing. We're not going to use the support or the customer success module there either. So how do you build in and keep sales and customer support on the same line and get them all using the same package? I mean, that's something you got to work out organizationally. But now, kind of the move we've made is our customer success folks are in the contacts with the reps. They're sharing notes inside. They're tagging each other. They're flagging each other. You get a really good synergy on the conversation, understanding of the deal level. And then you come to the onboarding part, because there ain't no onboarding module inside of HubSpot native. But again, you've got this magic thing called custom object. And it used to be kind of a heavy lift, almost a developer lift a few years ago to build a custom object. Mm-hmm. It's really, if you're a pretty good power user or an admin, you should be able to build a custom object pretty readily, right? So you use the deal pipeline, get something in the closed one, then you can hand it off into an onboarding pipeline and run that through the onboarding part until it gets to live, right?
And when you said with the lead piece, were you saying that you have maybe a separate pipe? Because, you know, you have various pipelines in HubSpot, you know, a partner pipeline, et cetera. Is that what you indicate that you're saying you have a pipeline for leads in there? Or is that still under the contact?
Kind of that lead object.
Oh,
okay. I've bolted on in the last year. That's something we personally stayed away from. It just caused more confusion. We had a pretty good standardization around how we handle lead flow against the lifecycle stage and lead status already. Didn't make sense to introduce that confusion to the.
Yeah, it was a little confusing. And we look like, okay, what's this doing now? And then, okay.
And that,
you know, it's a little janky though. I'm going to call it out. And I love HubSpot too, is we were going to a trade show and we're like, you know what? We use the business card scanning function on the app. Wow. Like, guys, we love you. We're on our path to gold. We want gold. We're going to be, we're true and blue, but you know, you got to up your game on that one. That one's tough.
That one is tough.
It is tough. Tough. Like it is like, I mean, it's Canada, but put everything in the first name line. It's like,
right.
So
HubSpot recently came out with some more, you know, event level functionality and stuff there to play with. But yeah, the card scanner is tough, Bex. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah. So Kevin, I want to make sure that everyone listening, restaurant tech companies are probably thinking at this point, oh yeah, this is very important. We're not doing this very well yet. Right. So they're leaning in and trying to figure out what their takeaways are. But if you're a restaurant brand and you're hearing this conversation, translate what it looks like when a company gets this right versus when a company gets this wrong from a customer perspective. Where do they feel it when a company's dialed in or not with their CRM and data and everything?
Well, I think the customer success motion gets a little bit more meaningful, right? If they fully understand what's going on and what's happening behind the scenes, and as well as the support motion from, so that's important, right? Hey, we got better visibility into the locations. We understand how that ties back into a franchise conversation. It gives better visibility to provide better service from that piece. But what we're talking about here does more serve the restaurant tech company's understanding of the market and how to go to market and where they have engagement and where they don't.
Well, it's funny. It's like two different kind of ships with their cannons all pointing outward. And there's CRM this way and CRM that way, but they're like, everybody's having CRM towards something.
Right.
It's just a funny thought. Adoption, right? This is something that seems to play a lot of organizations. Like, hey, we got the system. And candidly, sometimes we suffer from it. Like, hey, let's put our stuff in there, right? Hmm. One of the best practices I always thought was a neat idea, especially you mentioned it before, is being able to tag people in it or at them in, you know, you're in the conversation, at them and manage them back to the document. stop asking me where the email is. I just come into the record, right?
Yep.
And the moment you start seeing spreadsheets laying around, you know you probably have a problem. Is that, do you think that's a true statement?
It can be. Migrating out of something into a clean instance of HubSpot is rife with the ability for garbage out, garbage back in.
Yeah.
Be careful there for sure.
How do you drive adoption though? How do you get the team to come on board? Like, cause sales, the guys going to do what sales guys do. Sales manager needs to drive them to that tool. But what's the best, what's in universal best practices to, because marketing depends on the good data, right?
Yep.
How do you help teams encourage and reinforce some behaviors there? Because it really is a discipline that needs to happen.
It does, right? And the sales side of it is, you got to leave it to the sales to handle the sales side of it.
Yep.
With the way we help our brothers and sisters in sales from the marketing side is to automate a lot of what we need, right? So I don't have to go back and say, oh, sales guy, you didn't put that into closed one. You know, you didn't make it a customer in the lifecycle stage.
Right.
When a deal goes to closed one, run an automation to put lifecycle stage customer in the lead status to customer. So there's a lot of the marketing data completion that we need to run our metrics that can mm-hmm. be run and handled through smart automations by the marketing side and just leave the sales guys to sell in. But yeah, I mean, so where we really need the sales piece really tightly done, and it's a part that is kind of self-policing, is the deal pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
When do you open the deal? How do you put it through the pipeline and get it to closed one or closed lost? And if it's a closed loss, what's the reason for that?
Kevin, where do you, so let's, within CRM is ultimately organizing data, right? Yeah. So just focusing on data for a second, I think most people underestimate how difficult it is to both get and then maintain data quality from, you know, cleanliness, normalization, etc. What do you see be like the key points in the data journey, like when you're, you know, from the sourcing contacts out with, you know, potentially third-party suppliers of data, to, you know, bringing it into the CRM, to having the team maintain it, and then marketing against it, updating it, keeping it clean, etc. Where does your mind immediately go to? Ah, those are the key spots you really got to pay attention to.
Yeah, this kind of jumps to a data vendor conversation, right? And a lot of this stuff is already figured out for you with these data vendors. Now, prices and appetites may vary. And also how they focus is a little bit different, right? So Chain Store Guide is a very affordable data set. It probably gives you the best data source for how franchises are built against brands and where those locations are.
Great way to look at the lay of the land.
Right. So that's one way to do it. Right. So that's an important piece. Brizo Food Metrics has a really good game at the location level. If you really want to understand where every address is, and it's amazing. And foot traffic.
Hmm.
Foot traffic has been kind of important to us lately as we start looking at, you know, hey, where should kiosk go?
What about Tech Stack?
Tech Stack's in there too. Tech Stack's a lot of different vendors. Winsight Ignite. For Technomic Ignite, that's a great platform too. So I'd say in my mind, I kind of put Brizo and Ignite on the same platform or the same playing field.
Yeah.
Chain Store Guide we talked about. And the challenge is almost all these things, though, do break down around four or five locations. Anything under five, it gets a little nebulous.
Right.
Top line above that, five plus. Yeah, there's some really good sources out there. But if you need the franchise level information, Chain Store Guide's a really, really good way to start off.
What do you like for FDDs?
For which one?
Franchise disclosure documents to find those other little nuances as far as what we want to know about those brands. Do you have a favorite?
If I had to get that stuff, I'd go to RFDC type thing. I can't remember the name offhand.
We have one we played with called Vetted Business, and actually it's pretty good there, and it's actually not too bad on the price.
Which one is it?
Vetted Business.
Okay.
If you want FDD, it's in there. And it's like, yeah, you can get like 10 a month or something. It's actually pretty good.
And many you can find for free with a Google search.
Yeah.
It's just a question of how old is it, right? You got to make sure you're not getting like 2 years ago.
That's actually a great point. I mean, you pop open the ChatGPT instance, hit that deep search button and say, I want to build out this footprint for this brand in this region. You'll get a really good starting chunk of that for pretty much the cost of your subscription.
So I have a question against the use case, because we're on the subject of data. And this is something that all of us enjoy every trade show, every time we come up these days, and most of the shows have gone a similar direction. So I think this is a valuable use case to talk about. We pay our money for our sponsorship. We drop 20 grand on the booth, and we get this fantastic list of prospects, which says, company, roll, have a nice day, right? No phone number, no email, no actual person. And I know why, because people like me in the sales side just beat the crap out of it, right? And so that's why we can't have nice things. I'm sorry. It was all me.
True.
But how do you solve for that?
So that's a great one. There's two data sources we didn't talk about. We talked about company stuff, right?
Yeah.
LinkedIn Sales Navigator is kind of the go-to for everybody, is something like an Apollo or a ZoomInfo if you want to go high-end.
Yeah.
But that's a quick way to append. And we might have done that with a show list or two. You know, run it back through the append cycle and get what you need to.
Are you hitting the enrichment? Like, are you seeing getting 80% enrichment, 60? Because it seems that's kind of
on the bigger ones. On the bigger ones, I'd say you're probably looking at about 80%. Pretty standard.
Hmm. And then what's your
working on this?
You go through the trouble of getting the list. What are the highlights of your pre-show and post-show game?
Yeah, that's secret sauce. That's proprietary. Ooh.
Okay.
Well, you came on here, man. Sorry. You only get the publicly available stuff, by the way, folks.
Now everyone's going to like watch. Here. Now everyone's following Checkmate. Okay. Nothing I'm looking here. At this.
We're marketing, man.
That's where you got to buy Kevin's book. He's going to pitch at the end
That's
of
right.
this.
That's right. Yeah. Look, I got a link for you at the for the Amazon pre-order. Now, look, you're contacting your customers, you're contacting your top prospects, no surprise. You're lining the dinner, you're doing the entertainment, the conversations, you get the booth organized correct, right? There's not a lot of magic in there. I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? But, you know, once you get on that show floor, it's you're moving, you're working, you're getting the appointments set up, you're having the conversations. Some of them are going to hit in 3 months and some of them are going to hit in 2 to 3 years, but that genesis often happens at the show.
Do you buy the lead retrieval system?
No.
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 What is your solve?
HubSpot.
Okay. So you're So let's talk about the dynamics of that. I think that's actually meaningful, right? I have a busy ass booth. I got line out the door.
Yep.
I'm gonna go, hold on. Is that what's happening?
So you got some options there, right? One is you take a quick snap of the business card.
Smart. That's one option. Okay.
Right.
Name back.
Click, done. Get to it later. Another thing, you snap it. You got the HubSpot piece. You snap the badge. Write it down immediately after. Our sales guys have gotten really good of documenting conversations incredibly fast in HubSpot.
Are you going to use their phones?
On the mobile through the app.
HubSpot has phone numbers too, right? Like you actually use your HubSpot as a phone, as a dialer, which is another way to track those conversations and make sure you know that they're doing those outreaches. Does your team use that part?
We do.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got the list prior. Who's going to be there?
Yep.
You've got ways to enrich it prior. Probably won't enrich 100%, but you can enrich 80. You can load that list prior, you know, flag it for a show, and then you can pretty much sort fast, add a quick note, follow up, don't bother, you know, this is an opportunity, refer to this guy, call this partner. Run that quick inside of that mobile app or on the laptop on the counter and keep rolling when you get back.
So let's then pivot to the Marketing Hub side of things. So we're on the CRM thing. Now we're moving to Marketing Hub, which is the part that executes it, right? You have the social component, you have the content calendar and scheduling. Tell us about how you use that stuff, because that's what I noticed is people subscribe to it, let it sit abandoned, right? There's some power in there if I think they knew it was in them our hills. Right. So what are the things that are low hanging fruit for companies that are looking at this Marketing Hub going, I got the subscription, but God, I haven't scheduled anything. I'm not looking at my social accounts because it ties into those, right? Like what are some things they could turn on real quick and get benefit from?
Well, social for sure. I
mean, right.
Very easy platform to kind of build it once and shoot to 4 or 5 different platforms immediately. Plus you get the whole metric stream in there and then the canned reporting to build all that out. That's a fast one. Email's a fast one, obviously, and inside a Marketing Hub. And you use it so much, you sometimes forget what's even in there beyond it. But I mean, yeah, there's a ton of tools. You can plug in SMS if you've got permission to do, you know,
How do you feel about that? Texting somebody as a marketing mechanism, like I'm texting a CEO. Is that smart?
It's permission based, right? So if you're in a deal cycle and you've got permission, yeah. It's a great way to go.
If I have a relationship with you, yeah, clearly that. But an automated outbound campaign that has simple people's mobile numbers just saying, "Hey, you're going to meet me at RLC," like
no,
you bad business.
It's more for one to one marketing, right? There are business use cases, not this one, where you can do permission based mass texting and where it makes sense, right? But woe to people who hit those SMS messages and don't have permission. Like those are some pretty expensive funds.
Like to what number? Because I've seen a couple of companies doing it. I'm like, that's not, don't do that. That's bad.
10 grand per instance that you get referred out. Yeah. Do not call list. Do not text list. Yeah. Those aren't a joke.
Aren't.
So, I mean, but you know, hey, don't be a knucklehead. Pretty safe path to go there. You know,
well, I mean, there's mainstream.
There's nothing wrong too with having it on a form. You know, hey, do you have permission to text?
Yeah.
Do I have permission to text you? Or as part of the deal cycle, you know, you will be texted, and those are all fair avenues. Don't do the pre-authorized. I check it and force you to uncheck it. That's not a great defense, but there's absolutely a role for it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of marketing decorum standards. What's the balance? Like when you're reaching out to folks, like let's talk about that pre-show scenario, right? There's a cadence. What's a reasonable cadence? We're going to hit them every day till the show hits. You know, like what kind of wave of messaging should people think about? Because some of these guys are going to be doing it themselves, and maybe this is something that could help them go, listen, a little more depth touch might be better. What's your kind of cadence when you do that?
Yeah, to answer that a little bit differently, I think we're kind of into this realm of the 95-5 marketing thinking, where 95% of the people you might sell to don't need a solution this minute, but 5% do. So the art is, how do you fire that 5%?
Right.
So your marketing mix is by definition almost more top of funnel, brand heavy than hammer heavy, ideal state, right?
So more awareness based than call to action or act on.
Yep. That's part of the game, right? Yes, you could hammer 100% of your market and eke out that 5%. And that's probably, you know, a very common marketing motion, unfortunately. But you know, I think we can be a little bit more prescriptive than that. And okay, well, how do you get more prescriptive than that? Well, intent signals are one way to start, at least, like I said, start figuring out who's might be more interested than others and how do you use those. There's a lot of marketing signals out there you can start working with to kind of say, hey, if I've got a list of 300,000 people, 500,000 people, and it's a random walk down this list, where do I begin? At least you have more information with things like Zoom intent signals coming in. Hey, they have been actively searching for this. No, you don't know who, but if you know your buying group and, you know, if they're searching for catering and it's a brand, you probably have a reasonable guess that in this brand, somebody from the catering organization or the catering team is thinking about this. Maybe that's a place for me to start thinking and doing some work around. But again, I think you're getting to a point now where, yes, there's enough information on the web. Yes, when buyers are relatively well-informed, word of mouth, and being there when ready to serve when they're ready to engage is, you know, more the motion that we need to be in than in the past.
Kevin, where do you fall in this in terms of using AI? We can talk about tools from like a marketing creative standpoint, but even just in the messaging, right? Everybody gets, you know, blasted with emails that personalize the messaging with AI. You think that's a good idea, or is AI not able to get that right? You know, where is AI a friend? Where is it a foe?
It's not AI that's a friend or a foe. It's whether the user is being smart or not. Right. I kind of like, you know, like this, just a quick example. If I'm going to write a blog on catering and I plug it into ChatGPT, I'm going to be really unhappy with the result. It's going to be written, but it's not going to be relevant. Right. But if I take a minute and say, okay, I'm going to have a briefing doc. I'm going to plug in a lot of information on catering. I'm going to plug in some competitors who do catering. I'm going to have it search these websites and look at some catering information. And I'm going to load up all my value propositions and my tone of voice. Then I ask it to write that blog post.
Yeah.
Woo.
It's gonna be I think that tone of voice is clutch, though, right? The tone of voice is so clutch. How you write, how that feel,
right,
of your language, right? That's almost it. That's a brand piece in itself.
So I think still we use ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, pick your LLM poison there. We use it more as a co-pilot than a full on brain and engine, right? And we'll get through it eventually collectively, but the laziness is you got to train your GPT, got to train your dragon, you got to train your GPT, right? So, and that looks like there's a lot of different go-to-market playbooks you can do that for, right? So if you're going to do cold outreach, right, go research the company, have ChatGPT do that for you. Yeah. Research the company, understand your value proposition, build an account plan between what the company needs. Because it went through the trades, it went through the 10K, it went through all the reports that are out there, it went through the website, it went through the career site. Have GPT overlay your value propositions to come up with a bit of an account plan. Right. And then you at least, hey, based on what they've said to the world, based on what the world's reporting about them, based on this, based on the algorithm, I think this might be some coaching angles rather than I grab the persona, I grab the sequence, I hit send, and I hope somebody responded. Right.
Yeah.
You can do the same.
You're doing that. You're in the top 2% of our industry, Kevin. I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, everybody's got room to improve, but that's what we should be thinking about now. And that's where you can actually have the cute phrase of some personalization at scale. Yeah. The other alternative is to go through and click a bunch of contacts and drag them into a sequence because they met a persona.
But it's tone deaf. It's not matched to the CFO or the CEO or the different mindsets of different buyers you're trying to communicate with or engage, right?
100%. So then, okay, so how do you do that at scale? And that's when you come into automation, right? So you can plug these in one at a time, and that becomes really, really painful.
Right.
Why don't SDRs, why don't accountant execs do more of this? Because it takes 6 to 8 hours to build a plan. I mean, to build a really good, to do all the research you need, and then start building out a really good kind of one page, here's my account plan. Mm-hmm. That's time. And that's selling time, right? So there's a trade-off there, and you won't do it. But if I can run an automation, mm-hmm. there's a lot of automation platforms out there to do that, where I have my Google sheet of all the companies I want to research and their webs and everything I want to pull, run an automation to stick that into ChatGPT and then come out with a Google Doc on the outcome that says, here's my account plan. Here's my angles. Here's what's interesting. Here's the key contacts.
Capture plan, right? Exactly. Here are the key people in there, maybe motivators or how they'll influence it based on their department.
Yep, exactly.
Kevin, do you have a rough calculus for how a company should figure out how much of demand gen could fall on marketing versus sales?
I think there's a lot of good numbers out there published by a lot of good VCs that I kind of like that says somewhere between 30 to 50%. Yep. I think it's reasonable, but you got kind of three legs to that possible stool there, right? There's the marketing component. They've absolutely got to pony up good closable stuff. And then again, I think that's kind of in the 30 to 50% range for a B2B SaaS company. Then there's the partnership component, and they should be piling in a bunch of good leads. And those are high close opportunities, right? And then there's the sales angle. So the blend of that gets you to 100%. Mileage may vary by company. But that's kind of what you're looking at, right?
What about ad spend and budgeting as it relates to all this? Like, if I'm a small business, should I take that bait? Should I think more local? Like, how do you look at that? Or really just philosophically, when should you start spending money on advertising versus being scrappy? And then, because this does tie to the tool, because that's how all this kind of comes together in a way, right? So what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, if I had a 50 grand budget for the year, and I'm going to put it all into one show or into a year's long ad spend, you got a trade off there. Both could work. You're blowing $50,000 on one shot, and hopefully everything you planned worked appropriately, or you can parse $50,000 out on an ad spend to work
and change your bait throughout your fish.
Right. And
right
now maybe your worst case scenario is you screw up $100 in a month.
And what about the idea of ABM and CBM? Like CBM is a new thing, right? So we have ABM, which is the account-based market, and then we're now looking at the terms of CBM with the actual contact.
Right.
How do you see that evolving, or what's your opinion on those ideas now?
Well, I think one of the things we got to keep in mind is are you selling to an enterprise or are you selling to a small business?
Sure.
Right. If you're selling to an enterprise, it's a sale by committee. Right. And it might take you 6 months of conversations and certain projects that need to line up before your project comes up. Right. So, So you might have a 6 month sales cycle just to get the pilot, and then 3 month of pilot, and then 6 months deployment. Right. So there's a committee in there, that enterprise side, kind of going back.
Right.
You're talking about. So you're not just talking to the IT person, but you're talking to the marketing person, the catering person, the off-prem operator, you're talking to a lot of
the franchisees, right?
They might have a franchisee technology advisory council that you'd have to engage with as well, right? So larger accounts, you're probably looking more of an ABM motion because they're not making decisions in a vacuum. Smaller size accounts, I'd say up to 10, 15 locations in some part. You're probably dealing with an owner operator in a lot of those respects.
You go dynamic with it, like, so now your business is engaged. A business is engaged. I got them on the hook, right? And we know we're in the process. So am I still peppering different kinds of messaging to the places it might trickle down to these other folks?
No, and again, smart. That's always a great way to build a fight between sales and marketing. Why did you drop this conversation randomly into a deal? I had it. Now they want to talk about this, and you just screwed up my deal cycle.
Ooh,
right?
Good point.
It can happen, right? It does happen.
No, that's a really good point. Like, you're muddying the waters. You've introduced a whole new variable that could pull everything off track as a revisit to something new.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, important motion here. There's a button for sales. And I've seen this done in multiple companies, but there's a button for sales to push inside the contact or at the company level when it filters through. It says, stop marketing. And that stops the flow. So that point doesn't happen. It's just an automation. So when the emails are cycling through in the automation, it looks, it's one of the calls, is this box checked? If so,
looks for the flag.
Wow.
Now, hey, why aren't we marketing to this person? Because you left the button click. So you might degrade that button after 30 days of no, right? So you got to think through the secondary consequences of something like that. So yeah, you might want to degrade that and unflip it 30, 60, 90 days or never. Hey, this is a key account. We don't want this ever to be touched by marketing.
Right.
Sales got it. Customer success has it. Don't talk to it.
I had a ton of questions about marketing lists, but Chad, I know you've been trying to get in there. I'm doing dominate. I apologize.
So we hit the AI angle on the messaging and personalization and how that could mess things up. But just behind the scenes, not customer facing, just tools to do the job of marketing more efficiently. What do you like?
Oh, okay. I'm going to butcher the name here. Syntethy, I started playing with that. Adobe just did a joint venture with them. They already hit 100 million, this company, in
is that the Avatar company?
Avatar Video. Yeah. Yes.
Synthesia.
Yeah. That's it.
Synthesia, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The generic picture query type thing, it's there.
Yeah.
And Mike, you've done a lot of creative stuff with, I think, Ink Tank and all that. And we talked a little bit about that. So that's good. The whole, I'm going to build a deck. I'm going to build a one pager. We're getting close. We're getting really close.
Right.
Video, I was completely like, this is going to take a while. But playing with that app last night, that thing is pretty far along. I would love
to compare notes on that kind of stuff. We love Beautiful AI. That's a wonderful tool if you want to put together a PowerPoint really fast, just as we don't receive no money from, but they're fantastic for SMB that just wants to get stuff done quickly.
Yep.
Go to ChatGPT first, give it the prompt, tell ChatGPT you need the prompt. It will create that, plug that into Beautiful AI, and you have a fantastic deck.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was like, let's just see if this even works or if it's going to be a complete disaster. I took a data sheet and I'm like, it's going to give it a one page or see what it does. I was like, oh, wow, this is really good.
Oh, really?
It's better than I expected.
Like graphing and it's pointing out, what did it give you?
It gave me a 2-minute video on a new product we're working on.
Oh.
with an avatar that looked pretty darn good. And I didn't have to do anything other than like say, hey, I want you to write a kind of a product teaser on this thing. It's going to be for restaurant chains. Here's the PDF. Let me know what you generate. And it was like,
use it for chatbots. Like, hey, welcome, like a video support. And it talks in that sense. Like, what's the
total? I don't know about the company yet. Like I said, I just started playing with it. You know, another one.
Right, I'm going to start playing with it. We're going to compare notes here coming
up. This is the rest of Michael's day.
Have to do that.
And now my next NeuroSpicy adventure. Here I go.
Right. We've been playing with Gamma app for layouts and documents, but I want to hear more about yours when we talk again offline.
Yeah, no, I'm turning into a Pika guy. Pika. That's a lot of different, like, you know, you like see the squish it and the cake ones and stuff. It's got a lot of different cool templates, but then you can take any picture and, you know, talk to it too and does fun stuff. Just for a fun side though, and we'll come back to the subject. So I've been playing with a 2D AI that makes my 2D image, which is where I get a lot of my inky base stuff before I modify them. And then that 2D solution also has a 3D, which will say to turn it to 3D, and it shoots it to my 3D printer, and my little toy comes out that I concept in 2D, made to 3D, and printed it out to my printer.
Right. That's cool.
I'm a 54-year-old man child. I can make toys all day. It's amazing. Anyways, back to the subject. Chad, bring us home.
Well, just again, thinking about our audience. So let's say I know you're not at the startup anymore, Kevin, but let me pretend for a second you just joined a startup, but you weren't able to do marketing. So you had to think about how this company with, you know, maybe 2-3 founders, maybe 100 to 500K ARR, early stages, and they haven't made their first marketing hire. You know, they've outsourced everything, but they're thinking about making that first hire. What are the top one or two skill sets or ways of thinking that startups should be thinking about for their first marketing hire?
One, I'd truly be thinking, are you ready for a full-time marketing hire yet? That'd be one.
Fair.
100 to 500? You don't have a lot of peanut butter spread on the slice of bread there, right? I would honestly, I'd probably be thinking of
internal
costs, retain an agency for a few. Now, the other part is too, and you know, they're probably looking for product proof point, right? And if you're doing that, they're probably looking within their network or their, you know, close set of friends or businesses they know. They need to get that first product validation, right? You prove the product works before you can even start selling it beyond. So 100 to 500 might be a little soon. I mean, you're hiring a person as a full-time head. You know, they're not coming free. So how do you fit that into your budget? I would probably start with an agency on a variable cost, 3 month. Let's run a campaign to a tight group that fits an ICP that we think we can work on, ideal customer profile, or at least some customer profile, and see if we can get some meetings going and some traction.
Very good.
Do you have a group like? Because marketers, salespeople cluster. I imagine, you know, marketers cluster too. Are there places where you water, read, and people get together at forums that you like on LinkedIn or places that you go to say, hey, come here, you're going to learn. This is a great source for tossing around ideas. Any groups you promote?
Not really groups, unfortunately. Not
really forum ones.
There's some marketing personalities I definitely follow.
Yeah, who do you like?
Yeah, I like I really like what Kyle Coleman's doing over at Copy AI.
Okay,
yeah, he's a smart guy. There's a lot of smart people out there, obviously, but he's one that's kind of helped shape some of my thinking. At all,
are you an Alex Hormozi prescriber? You know, that's that guy. You know, he's kind of a hipster marketer, badass dude. I mean, he's really I like his style.
No, but he's a guy I like. I'm more like, hey, what do I need than who do I follow for a while until I can figure out how to build it myself or build a case to invest in it.
Got it. Before we hop off, I forgot to ask, in HubSpot, they've rolled out AI, right? They have a version of that, whether it's assignments and different things we'll attribute inside the deal. And I think there's even some, you know, language tuning things you can do your work, you know, what you're writing inside of HubSpot. And it also has its own data enrichment that they've added to it. Have you played with that data enrichment?
Breeze, not too much.
Yeah,
now, they got a lot of good, like everybody else does. They got some good co-pilot stuff, right?
Sure.
And help me clean up this email, help me write this, help me even now write and describe a report. So that's useful, but again, Copilot stuff.
Right.
Wouldn't call it really AI, but they've got some pretty good lead scoring systems in the background, right? For against behaviors and things that are happening inside against the contact and against the company. How do you score or quantify a lead? Okay. The Bree stuff, haven't played with it too much. We're using other systems to do more of the enrichment, and it doesn't, yes, it'll enrich stuff like a tech stack, but it'll tell you like, hey, here's what they're using for cybersecurity, or here's what they're using. It's not, you know, what POS, what's your loyalty?
Right, KDS.
Yeah. There's other systems you'd go to for that. Brizo, Restaurantology, or a couple that are really good for that. And Ignite there is also a good one. Maybe some other applications for it, but just we got other stuff in the tech stack that's doing it for us right now.
There are so many things to pick from. Looks like we're coming up on time here. So you have a book coming out?
No, I don't. That was good.
I was going to say your secret sauce we talked about at the beginning is you're going to have to wait for the book. Where are you going to be next? We're going to Food on Demand coming up soon. NRA is coming up. Where are we going to see you next?
You'll see me at FOD. So look forward to that, May 5 through 7. And then I think Chad's going there maybe.
Where's that?
Popeyes. The Popeyes.
Oh, yeah, the Popeyes show. And that's up in Orlando. That's an hour from my house.
May 5
through 7. You're going to come here and go kayaking first with my manatees and gators?
There you go. My brother just dove down in the Blue Grotto. He's loved it.
Oh, that's a bucket list. I have all my gear and I haven't gone. I went diving here once and I got washed out by silt so bad. I was like, I was so turned off. But you need a group of buddies to go with. You know, it's not one of those things just solo. It's a very dangerous sport too.
It is.
Yeah. Well, dude, it is always a pleasure. You're super fun to talk to. You're incredibly smart about it, and you're clearly passionate about everything marketing. It sounds like you'd be willing to talk to some people if they had questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So best way to reach you, LinkedIn, I'm guessing.
LinkedIn, yep. Kevin W. Jaskolka, all one line there on LinkedIn.
Love it. You know, I also love you. We're doing shameless plugging. Like, good for you. Like, this is, you work for an awesome company. You know, and I love it when somebody can come on and just be themselves and talk about the things they love and want to bring people along. Dude, anytime you want to do this, you let us know. I mean,
sounds good. We'll see you at the trade show circuit. We'll see you next week.
We actually might be able to do this from Food on Demand. I'll have my stuff.
Drop by.
I'm
bringing all my gear. So I'll have a nice move camera with me, my lavaliers. I'll stop by. We can do some fun stuff and show our love back to Checkmate and just Lisa. I'll give a shout out.
I guess.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Chad, thanks. I'll talk to you guys. This has been Chat GTM episode something. It'll be on the label of the cover. And
19.
See Kevin out in the world. What was it, 19?
19.
Oh, the big 20 is coming soon. And Chad will no longer have the boom microphone. He's going to be equipped with a very nice DJ.
Or background noise depending.
Yeah.
Maybe the headset. But I know, and noise cancellation and all that. So we'll see how it goes.
A whole new world. All right. Until next time, guys, thank you very much for your time and attention, and we'll see you later.